Good morning.
Good morning.
The word synthesis, and I'd like to start with a prayer. So I'd like you to sort of go back into that place where you were with David's music. That beautiful softness and peace that you found. And just go back there. I come into my quietness also and become still. I accept the peace of this stillness as the antithesis of the busy week that I have had, or the busy week that is still ahead of me. The peace brings a sense of gratitude for all the wonderful things I have gotten done in this busy week, with its noise and movement and occasional stress. I blend the peace and the gratitude into a joyful synthesis of each thesis and each antithesis, describing my days. I now divinely accept something I've said all my life. There are two sides to every question. I simply allow the goods and the bads, the ups and the downs, the rights and the wrongs, the this way and that ways of my life to become divine in my life as I synthesize them all into a feeling of oneness. We are all one in the contrasts of life as we synthesize each moment, finding the broader view which makes us one with one another. I realize that my world of opposites is also a world of oneness. There are two sides to every coin. Even oneness depends on manyness for its own meaning. They require each other in the synthesis of life as we know it. So I celebrate the power we each have to synthesize our contrasts and conflicts and opposites into a celebration of life as it is. A life of oneness that comes from our own power. I know each of us can know the peace that comes from synthesis in our lives. We rise above the opposites and see the bigger picture, knowing that oneness and manyness are our ultimate synthesis. We accept and know. For this sense of peace and gratitude, I give great thanks. I accept my life and the lives of everyone listening here, just as they are, full of theses and antitheses and synthesis. We have the power to synthesize joy from all that is. And so in great thanksgiving, I release and I let it be and peacefully synthesize. And so it is. Amen. I'd kind of like to ask you all to just stay in your peaceful place and just think about synthesis and its other versions. Synthesize as a verb, synthetic as an adjective. Let's let them drift around in your head and see if you can come up with any memory of when you first learned of that word or first used it, or discovered it, or some other significant, anything else in your life that was significant that involved that word. Anyone have one that they'd like to share?
I'm sorry, this is probably a true memory. And it's the first thing that came up, I remember as a child. I know where I was living, so I was younger than 10 years old. And my mother, every Sunday, I think it was, would do ironing. And my father had to dress rather professionally. And they were all cotton shirts. So my mother, being the early 1960s housewife, would be ironing these cotton shirts, which are still a pain in the ass. Everybody owns all cotton shirts. And when they came out with whatever that they made shirts out of, I guess it was polyester or whatever, I remember her distinctly saying, oh, they're synthetic, they're so good. And it just made her day, because even if she had to iron it, she just had to go, blip, 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 that's iron, instead of try again and sprinkle water on it with the Coke bottle with the little stopper in it that dribbles. And that's my memory, and I think, like I said, I'm fairly certain, maybe a little blurred because it's a long time ago, but it's probably fairly accurate.
I like that. When I first agreed to this date and this topic and this angel card synthesis, that was 2 or 3 months ago. And I started just letting the word float around in my head like I just asked you to do for some time. And it wasn't very long before I came up with a memory like that. The first time that I actually learned about that word and how it might be used. And that was almost 70 years ago. I was only 6 or 7 years old. It was 1943 or 1945. It was in the middle of World War II. And I lived in Detroit, the center of the auto industry, where we built all of the tanks and artillery and equipment, you know, that was used in the war. And one of the things that we got very short of was rubber. And you couldn't, everything was rationed then, and you couldn't buy tires for your cars. And my father came home one day just absolutely happy because he had been able to buy a tire because they were rationed and enough time had gone by that he was allowed to buy a tire and get it put on a car, which we really needed. And he explained to me that the reason that it's become available was because the United States had totally run out of rubber. And, you know, we made so many tires for truck or military equipment and airplanes and things like that. And civilians couldn't get it. But industry finally got around to synthesizing rubber. Instead of from sap from trees, it was from crude oil and a bunch of other things. And they started producing synthetic oil or synthetic tires. And my father was so happy, but he explained what this was about and what synthesis meant and, you know, that they made this stuff. But the way everybody talked about it back then, it had a sort of a negative connotation to it also, because this was fake rubber. It wasn't real. And so there was something fake about synthetic. And back during the war, everybody sort of assumed that we would go back to using rubber again, because it had to be better than this synthetic stuff. As it turned out, that wasn't true. We never went back to using pure rubber again for tires, you know, like that. And we've been driving on synthetic tires ever since. So I was delighted when that memory came up, because I was absolutely certain that was my first ever learning of that word. And I don't have memories like that very often. Over the last few weeks, after I chose my topic, I just let, for quite a while, I just let the words float in my head, you know, like I asked you to do. And I started seeing a lot of things in my life around me that were syntheses of things. And I started appreciating that word. And but I just thought, I'm just going to let this drift. I didn't need right then to start on the talk, and I'll just let it drift in my head, and I'm going to wait for something to trigger my, you know, readiness to start investigating and get ready to give a talk on this. Well, a lot of time went by. And it was about 4 or 5 weeks ago, not that long, 4 weeks ago, I got an email one day from Doug Kinney, who some of you probably know. He goes to our center in Falls Church. And he and I both belong to an organization called the Arlington Institute, which used to be in Arlington. And now the guy that ran it and sort of controlled it decided to retire, and he moved to Berkeley Springs. So he now does programs out there in Berkeley Springs. And Doug and I have gone to a couple before together. And he sent me this email inviting me to go with him because Greg Braden was going to be talking. How many of you know Greg Braden? Okay, yeah, he's very well known in New Thought. And I'd already heard him talk a couple of times and read two of his books, and I had some resistance to him in ways, so Diane sort of ordered me, you should go to hear that talk. But and Doug sent me a flyer electronically with this. I just want to read you something from this flyer that was telling what Doug was going to start talking about, or Greg, rather. And his title was going to be Creating Resilience in a Time of Extremes. And I really believe sort of we're coming into a time of extremes where we've got to start being resilient. So I thought, I like that topic. But here's what his flyer said. Situation. We live in a time of extremes. From failing economies and the realities of climate change to the violent breakdown of traditional societies, it's clear that we've entered a new phase of life on planet Earth. Without the tools to adapt to such abrupt change, the consequences include the documented rise in stress-related illness and disease and deaths, the rising loss of traditional jobs, stable income, and feelings of security, the struggle to find a sense of well-being in my life, increased conflict in families and societies as they try to meet new needs with old thinking. The opportunity. We solve our problems based upon the way we think of ourselves. When new discoveries show us where the beliefs of the past no longer apply, we owe it to ourselves to update our thinking. Well, I read that, and it had some other information after that about what he was going to talk about, and I just thought, I've got to go to this. So I told Doug I'd go, and we went. And that was 3 weeks ago yesterday. It was on a Saturday. And Greg came up and got up on the stage, and it was in a theater in Berkeley Springs, the Star Theater. And there were between 200 and 300 people there. But he got up and started talking. And on his very first slide, the first thing he started with was a quote from a man named Edward O. Wilson, who is apparently a modern philosopher. He's still alive, and he's fairly well known nowadays. The quote said, "We are drowning in information while starving for wisdom. The world henceforth will be run by synthesizers. People able to put together the right information at the right time, think critically about it, and make important choices wisely." Well, that was the trigger I've been waiting a number of weeks to hear. And as soon as I got back, I started thinking, okay, it's time to Google. And I Googled E.O. Wilson synthesis. Got all kinds of stuff. Then I just Googled just plain synthesis and got a lot of stuff there, too. So I was really delighted that I had gotten that trigger and was ready to go. Before I go much further, I've also got some just definitions. So I want to talk about the definitions of the word synthesis. It's a noun. The plural is syntheses. First definition. The combining of constituent elements of separate material or abstract entities into a single or unified entity. So the opposite of analysis, which is the separating of materials and abstract entities into their separate parts. Okay, so a combining of the constituent elements of separate materials or abstract ideas into a single unified entity. Can you think of just anything in your life around you that fits that definition, that combining? Anybody offer one?
Science, mind, philosophy.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yoga.
What?
Yoga.
Yoga.
Mind, body, spirit.
Okay.
Relationships.
Okay. How about just the growth of a tree? Photosynthesis is a very fundamental form of synthesis. Okay? Second definition, a complex whole formed by combining. That's the what you end up with when you synthesize. Anybody think of one of those that fits right in your life? Anybody want to say one? How about the human body, your body? It is absolutely a product of synthesis. It's not photosynthesis that produces plants and trees. It's, I'll call it, animal synthesis. Okay. Third definition in chemistry, the forming or building of a more complex substance or compound from elements of simpler compounds. Well, that's just the chemistry of what we've been talking about. Then the fourth one is from philosophy. And this came up first in my mind because my friend Ann here, who came with us today several weeks ago, just looked at me one day when I'm just starting to really get into trying to get serious about this, and she said, you should look up Hegel. So I Googled that, and I came up with the Hegelian dialectic, which lots of philosophers refer to. And it's a method of dialectic dialogue, you know, philosophers use. And it's based on, and the definition is, the third stage of argument in Hegelian dialectic, which reconciles the mutually contradictory first two propositions, thesis and antithesis. So you get thesis, antithesis, you synthesize, and the way they all talk about this is what that produces is a new thesis from a slightly higher level. And every new thesis has a built-in antithesis. It's the opposite. And you rise up a little and synthesize again, and you get a new synthesis. And that's described as the process of the Hegelian dialectic that a lot of philosophers use. And that to me, is very common in religious science, that kind of practice when we do things. When I got into this, it was actually just a few nights ago, I just came up with one of these that I just had to, I was getting very frustrated about not getting on with preparing this talk. And once I'd gotten started, though, that one night I just had this, and I thought, thesis. I want to think about synthesis tonight for my talk preparation. Antithesis. I want to completely forget about synthesis tonight and relax. And that night, my synthesis was, I want to completely forget about thinking about synthesis tonight, or something like that. So, I've had some fun with it, and I've gotten into it. There's also synthesize, which is the verb, and that has its definitions, but that's what we do when we create a synthesis. So, when I got into getting ready for this talk, after I'd gone to the the Greg Braden talk and sort of gotten that first inspiration. I got into Googling and having a lot of fun with Google, and I found all kinds of information. And I immediately started telling myself, I've got to start writing some of this down or collecting it or getting it organized and that kind of stuff. And I had this huge resistance to doing that. I love giving talks. I hate preparing talks. So after a day or two, I went down to my backyard to feed the ducks and put bird feed in the feeders and all that kind of stuff. And I thought to myself, okay, when I come back up to the house, I'm going to sit down and start an outline. This was about 3 weeks ago. I got down to the yard, I finished filling the bird feeders and everything else, and then I happened to look down at the walk that I have around our lower yard, which is a floodplain for Accotink Creek. I looked at the walk, and it had been, I'd originally put in about 10 years ago, and had river pebbles all the way around. It was beautiful to look down on from the house. But 3 months ago, we'd had a flood, and the walk was covered with mud. And when it started warming up, and springtime started coming, the weeds and the grass just loved that mud where they could synthesize again themselves and just spread. And by the time I got 3 weeks ago and was trying to get serious about working on this talk, when you look down from our windows in the house at the backyard, the walk was exactly, looked just like the lawn, solid with green, green. Well, that day when I was down there thinking, okay, I got to go back up and work on this talk, I happened to look down at the walk, and there was this big clump of grass. And it had rained the day before, and I reached down, and I grabbed this clump, and it just popped out by the roots as a big clump, and I just shook the dirt and the stones off of it, and I thought, oh, I've got to clean up this walk. And I went up and got a big plastic bucket and a weed digger and a paper bag because the ground was wet so I could sit on it. And I went down and I sat down on the walk and I pulled up some more of these weeds and hunks of corn. And put it in the thing. And I just kept going for an hour and a half. Covered about 6 or 7 feet of the walk, which is four feet wide about. And then I thought to myself, I need to go up and work on this talk. And then I thought, yeah, but now I got this walk that has no green in it, it's just mud and stones. So I went up, got in my car, drove down to Home Depot and bought 3 bags of river pebbles. Brought them up, wheeled them down to the yard and spread them on that section of walk. And I looked at it, oh, that looks like it did when it was new. I love it. So I went back up to the house. Somehow I managed to find other things to do. And I did spend a little more time Googling some things and browsing, on the end, but I didn't start an outline. And I was thinking, I'm procrastinating terribly. Well, this went on for a couple of days, and I started realizing I'm getting a lot of work done on that walk. I am a master procrastinator. And I was feeling happy. I was really joyful because I was getting so much done. And not just the walk, other things that I was getting done off my to-do list and keeping everything going. Anything I could do to avoid starting an outline for this talk. And I was thinking to myself, well, then I Googled procrastination. And sure enough, right away, I found an article on how to procrastinate productively and usefully. And it had 11 things to include in your life. And I looked at it, and I was already doing 9 of them. So I thought, well, I got a couple more to work on. And then I just decided, well, procrastination is a beautiful synthesis of things on your to-do list. So I got to the point then when It's a little over a week ago when I was just thinking, I've had 2 weeks of avoiding starting an outline and getting serious about this talk. So I called sent an email to my practitioner and decided to schedule a prac session with him where I was the client. And we do it by phone because he's out in California, Reverend Michael Torfey. And we scheduled it for Monday, last Monday, just 6 days ago. And I did this because I was thinking, he can help me get my mind going into a place where I can really get to work on this talk and love it and sit down and get it organized. Well, then about just that morning, Monday morning, a little over 30 minutes before I was supposed to call him to start the session, I just realized I'm going to feel really guilty if I talk to him and I haven't put anything down on paper yet. I've got to start an outline. So I was at my computer where I normally sit anyway when I call him, and I just opened up Microsoft Word, new document, typed synthesis across the top of the page, and then just started writing about all of these things that have been floating in my head for weeks, just trying to put down the most important ones in some order that I thought might make sense. It didn't, but but I had this wonderful feeling of I've crossed a huge boundary, a barrier, and I've gotten it started. Now it's going to be easier to just sit down and start playing with this outline and get it done. So when I called Reverend Michael and started my session, I was sort of happy that I'd gotten that done. And in the middle of the session, I sort of went on and on about what I'd been through working on my walk and coming up and then not working on my talk. And I talked about procrastination a lot. And this went on and on. And by this time, when I was having this talk, by this time, I had actually finished over 100 feet of this walk down there, pulling up all the grass and weeds and getting down a whole new layer of river pebbles. And when you look down from the creek now, it looked just like it did 10 years ago when it was new, and we were just loving it. So I was really feeling good about that. So I tended to just go on and on with Reverend Michael about that. And at one point, he just stopped me. He said, "Ed, I want you to think..." Oh, the other thing was, I had intended to ask him for something constructive that I could use in this talk as my practitioner. I'd totally forgotten to do that. But I got to this point where he just stopped me. He said, "Ed, just stop a minute." He said, "I want you to realize you have created a beautiful synthesis between talking your walk and walking your talk."
Wow.
And I thought, that's what I needed from him for this talk. So I've been doing that, talking a lot about my walk and walking a lot down there to working on my walk. So I was really happy when I got that done. And then after that call, I finally just kept working on the talk and got the outline and got to the point where I was ready to come here. And I've just got two final points. The first one I thank Anne for, because she looked at me, and this is only, I don't know, a few days ago. She said, "Ed, stop and think about what would it be like if the world were, what would the world be like if there was absolutely no such thing as synthesis?" And I stopped and started thinking. And my first reaction was there would be no life like we have now, no consciousness. We'd all be either plants or one-celled organisms. And then I started thinking beyond that. And I thought, a one-celled organism is a synthesis of a lot of things. And I finally decided that if there was no such thing as synthesis, the universe would be nothing but a sea of quantum particles floating around in space, thumbing their noses at each other. So the universe is synthetic. And finally, I'll just compliment Ernest Holmes, because in the spiritual world, to me, he has created the best synthesis I can imagine to explain God. And he did it with that, I was going to mark, do it on the pen, but we don't have pens today, with that big circle that is God. And it's got layers. Oh, it's up there, yes. The one in the heart up there. The top section is spirit. So the synthesis, just in words, I just wrote down thesis, spirit, totally free. Antithesis, law, totally automatic. Synthesis, form, life as we know it.
We don't have to study.
And my next words were, and that's it. For I want to know who managed that. Your timing is perfect. Oh, what happened?
We're all laughing because...
Yes, the sign that has the word study on it from Sterling Study Group, just as I was ready to say, that's it, the sign fell and went... That's it.